Good afternoon. So let me first of all just thank the organizers for organizing this and in particular inviting me, and I'm both grateful and honored to be here with such a distinguished list of speakers and a distinguished audience. So let me just start off. So it turned out this was kind of an interesting project. I did this work, as you can see, with Brian Forrest and Ibrahim Semi at the University of Waterloo. Brian, who many of you saw talk yesterday, is a senior faculty member, and Ibrahim is a postdoc. pardon me. So this sort of came about at a confluence of actually a sort of small variety of ideas that at first, I had no suspicion that they were related, and actually it was Ibrahim who ultimately convinced me they were, and we really hammered this out and turned it into quite a few theorems that are surprisingly related. So let me just begin with the first of the questions that comes out from here. So let me just start with a modest goal. I'll start with a compact group, and actually many of my slides will be on compact groups. I'll try to announce when I have compact or not. Now, in general, it's known that if I look at the projective tensor product, so you can see I've been corrupted by reading Ephros and Ruan. This is now for me the projective tensor symbol. It's known from Victor Lozert, I think this was mentioned in Brian's talk, that there's not a natural identification between that projective tensor product and the Fourier algebra of G cross G unless G has an abelian subgroup of finite index. And as a, you know, I guess sort of maybe unrelated fact, but also interesting, Barry Johnson in his 94 London Math Society article, he was studying actually amenability of this Fourier algebra, and he ended up devising some sort of intermediate object. Essentially what it is because we're in a compact group, this guy is sitting as a subalgebra of L1. It's an algebra of bounded functions. And you can convolve any two members together, and because that's continuous bilinear, you can extend it to the projective tensor product. And the image is some sort of special subalgebra. And this played a really critical role in Barry Johnson's work in coming up with a very surprising theorem that A of G is frequently non-amenable. However, once we realize the Fourier algebra is an operator space, and I'll say a little bit more about this later, then one of the best things that happens is this nice formula of Ephros and Ruan. Now, this is for general predials of von Neumann algebras, and in principle, it generalizes Grof and Dieck's projective tensor product formula on L1 spaces. But essentially, if I take a Fourier algebra really with any pair of groups, they don't just have to be compact, but as long as they're locally compact, we get a natural identification. So given that this operator projective tensor product a lot more generous, it gives us the whole thing. Due to reasons I had in another paper, I was sort of naturally interested in knowing if when I took the map of either convolving or what I might call twisted convolving, so this check here is I just replace the argument of the group with the inverse of the argument of the group and the function. Well, if I look at either of these, one might wonder, would that have full range? And from a naive perspective, and due to some other functorial things, it seems natural enough. But obviously, I'm building up a straw man here. My goal is to show you that actually that's going to fail. Okay, now a second family of problems. Okay, actually, I think I'll just use the blackboard for 1 minute. I prepared these slides for a more Banach algebra-oriented meeting, so I should probably tell you what I mean by an amenable Banach algebra. Okay, so in general, for a Banach algebra, we'll consider Banach modules. So those would be spaces X that AX continuously both on the left and the right of the space by bounded actions. And turns out that if I take the dual space and I sort of adjoint these actions, then I also get nice bimodules. This was called a dual bimodule. And I'm going to say that my algebra A is amenable if any derivation D from A into this dual module, now what's the derivation? Well, it just satisfies the derivation property. is necessarily inner. So D of A is equal to A acting on F minus F dot A, where F is an element of that dual space. Now, I guess at first glance, it doesn't really strike one as a property that's going to have a lot of meaning or interest, but it turns out to be related to a lot of averaging properties that come about in Banach algebra. In fact, Barry Johnson proved if you take the convolution group algebra, that it's amenable if and only if G is an amenable group. So it turns out to evoke a lot of averaging in that way. And there's certain intrinsic ways of seeing amenability. Like, this is a very extrinsic definition. And those intrinsic ways really do, I think, bring it sort of to the feeling of averaging. Now, I won't be using that, so I'm not going to go into it. Let me just note there's this other definition, which sadly sounds awfully close to a definition, I guess due to Cowling and Hugger up in groups, but this means something quite a bit different. I'm going to say that A is weakly amenable if every derivation from A into its own dual space is inner. So that's an obviously weaker property, and there are cases that can be demonstrated weak amenability holds, but amenability doesn't. Okay, so let me go back. Now, of course, I guess saying that, I can throw this adjective operator in front by just insisting that everything is a natural operator space structure and is reasonably completely bounded. Okay, so for a locally compact group, A of G is amenable if and only if it has a bounded approximate identity, as Fokker mentioned in his talk. That's the theorem of Lepton. So at first glance, it seems to have many of the accoutrements of amenable Banach algebra. As it turns out, a bounded approximate identity is a necessity. But it turns out that's not enough to allow amenability. In fact, it turns out you're pretty close to an abelian group. You need an abelian subgroup of finite index in order to achieve amenability. And they also studied weak amenability. It turns out that's a bit more generous. All you need is the connected component of the identity to be abelian. And it's conjectured that when A is weakly amenable, that must be the case. But actually, we don't know a proof of that yet, so we don't even know the truth of that result. And of course, predating their result, in fact, by quite a while, I suppose, is Barry Johnson's famous result, which I sort of alluded to earlier, that there are some compact groups for which the Fourier algebra fails to be even weakly amenable. Well, Zhangjian Ruan, I think this is very close to the time that Johnson was working on this, and for related reasons, sort of realized if you take account the operator space structure that a Fourier algebra naturally inherits as being the predo of a von Neumann algebra, well, then actually the amenability works out. And in fact, in a really nice way. And it turns out for group algebra, as I mentioned, Johnson's result about L1 of G being amenable as a Banach algebra, if and only if the group is amenable, well, there's a sister result which wasn't proved for nearly 20 years later. It turns out L1 of G is always weakly amenable. Well, I, and actually completely independently, and I have to say by, I think, a nicer proof, Ibrahim, managed to prove that A of G is always operator weakly amenable. So in fact, once we put in this operator sort of adverb in front of amenability, it seems to make all of the theorems the beautiful analog that one might expect. Okay, so that's sort of the background. Now, I'll tell you how this works in a moment, but Brian Forrest, in a paper about 10 years ago, he defined some sort of Fourier algebras of coset spaces. And they actually did it for cosets of general groups, but the ones he was only able to prove theorems about were cosets of compact subgroups. And I think when I tell you the definition, you'll see why it's pretty natural to think of this. And it's pretty easy, if you take Brian's definition and you look at the operator space structure that this guy naturally is going to get, it turns out it actually satisfies the operator projective tensor product formula. And if you look at the proof of Ruan's theorem, the analog of this for A of G, tensor A of G, was extremely important in getting those averaging arguments that proved it was operator amenable. So, at least from a naive perspective, this has many of the accoutrements of an operator amenable algebra. And actually, just naively talking about it, we figured, well, with just a little bit of elbow grease, we could surely prove that these things are operator amenable, or at least operator weakly amenable. Well, again, I'm going to show that that's not going to work in general either. So this is kind of an interesting thing. Okay. let me just tell you about the general setup. So we actually ended up, pardon me, studying things in a context that we wanted a bit more general than just for the Fourier algebra. So when I invite this calligraphic A, what I'm meaning here is just a generic Banach function algebra on a locally compact group. And I want this Banach function algebra to at least cooperate with the group structure with respect to right translations, sort of all reasonable ways. And then I'll define A of G colon K here. Well, that'll essentially be all the fixed points of the right group actions, but arising from a certain compact subgroup K. Well, it's pretty easy to see because K has this norm, this sort of total mass 1 Haar measure being a compact subgroup. Well, it's going to be easy to average arbitrary functions. We get a nice contractive projection into that space there. And it's pretty obvious, you just write it down, that it's even sort of has a nice expectation property. It's a module map over the smaller algebra. Okay. So what we might do then is I might say, well, let's just identify this as a family of functions on the coset space. That can be done quite naturally. Okay, so I guess I'm going to need this notation. So essentially what gamma is going to be, it's basically going to be the sort of norm 1 projection, which takes this guy onto the quotient guy. That's essentially how it's set up to work. And then this map N is going to be a notation. I'll invoke this a few times to be sort of a right inverse to that gamma. So it's going to take this guy here and stick it back into things which are constant on cosets of K. Okay, so this is a sort of general thing that we want to study here. And turns out this is actually related, at least for compact groups, to convolutions. Now, I use this word twisted, probably not in a deep way like Vineman did in his talk. By twisting, I mean simply that I'm doing convolutions, and in one variable, I'm just changing T to a T inverse. That's what I mean by twisting. So how is this going to relate to sort of a coset structure? Well, we start with a compact group, and then I'm going to look inside of G cross G, and I'll take the compact subgroup of the diagonal. Okay, now if you look at the coset space, well, just there's a natural homeomorphism to G. In fact, it's even sort of a G morphism, sort of as a space on which G acts in some sort of reasonable way. So when I look at this space here, functions constant with respect to that diagonal, or on cosets of the diagonal, I'm just going to identify that as being some set of functions on G again, since the underlying topological space is again G, but I'll throw that little delta in there to remind us that we've kind of brought it from our original algebra A of G cross G in some funny way. So this map gamma that kind of projects this guy down onto here, well, I advocate to you that this is in principle a convolution. Because if I had the case where my algebra of functions contained sort of elementary tensors of functions on G and G respectively, well, this really looks like sort of a convolution formula. And in fact, this is something that has shown up in the literature in a few places. Actually, it never showed up here for the reason being that it's trivial, that you just end up with continuous functions on G again. But this one here, I think, is quite interesting. So instead of taking, say, the injective tensor product of C of G with itself, maybe I'll take the Hogarth tensor product. And one version of Grothendieck's inequality tells you that at least up to a constant, that norm is the same as the projective norm. I'll call this the Feropoulos algebra, V of G cross G, the reason being that in commutator groups, Feropoulos proved that it naturally contains the Fourier algebra in a certain natural way, pretty much coming from this construction here. And actually, for general compact groups, non-abelian, this was proved by myself and Turovska a few years ago. So actually, there's already interesting situations in which this has arisen. Now, of course, again, I'll allude to Johnson's algebra A gamma. That comes about from taking the projective tensor product and regarding these as functions on G cross G. And of course, what we're really interested in is this coset space here. This is the one that we actually are going to be able to say something about in some nice cases. So, well, I've probably said the word Fourier algebra about 12 times now. I should probably at least have the courtesy to tell you what it is. Okay. Well, the Fourier algebra is just the canonical predual of the von Neumann algebra generated by the left regular representation of a locally compact group. And because it's a predual of a von Neumann algebra, it has a sort of natural operator space structure that it gets in sort of duality. Now, if I have an abelian group, and really this is just an L1 algebra with Pontryag and dual object, and there's not much to say here because it turns out the operator space structure is a maximal structure, and all bounded maps out of here are automatically completely bounded. So harmonic analysis theorems about L1, in fact, in my humble opinion, are often theorems about completely bounded maps. It's just not evident when you write it down. Okay, well, for a compact group, we have the Peter Weyl theorem in its sort of strongest form gives a nice decomposition of the left regular representation. And that tells us that the von Neumann algebra has a certain nice form. And basically these, what I'm trying to say here notationally is these are the same matrices represented with sort of a high multiplicity. Well, that doesn't really affect norms here. I could just do it without multiplicity and that's the same. But when I kind of test it in dual pairing against these trace type matrices, well, actually, the multiplicity does matter. It sort of turns into a weight. And actually, if you look at this, then there's a natural way. If someone throws a continuous function on your lap, you might have an algorithm how to test if it's in the Fourier algebra. You simply compute the Fourier transforms, which are matrices, take the SAT and 1 norms, and sum them up with these weights and see if it converges. And it will, if and only if you're in the Fourier algebra. Okay. Let me just talk about one of the technical tools that I'm going to need to progress. It turns out we found a lot of linkages here between the structures of ideals and the way we could do analysis on these things. Let me just be purposely a little bit brief since I'm going to run out of time. So it turns out, so in arbitrary Banach algebras, you have non-unique ideals vanishing on a fixed closed set. And if you have a unique ideal, you get a spectral set. But in any other situation, you're going to get a set that's not a set of spectral synthesis. And Feropoulos, and actually, I think Hertz kind of suggested this, but Feropoulos proved it in a nice way, that for compact abelian groups, you get a certain relationship between spectral sets of the Fourier algebra and certain sets in what I like to call this Feropoulos algebra. And he actually used that to give a much simplified proof of Malyavin's theorem that I guess L1 algebras of discrete groups always have sets of non-synthesis. So that's what he used it for. And Ludmila Turovska and I, we managed to just get his result for compact groups. And then there's sort of a history, let me just mention this one here, of being able to look at properties of ideals between, say, the Fourier algebra of G and the Fourier algebra of A of G mod N for certain normal subgroups. You can see there's a couple of sample results. Well, what we have is at least a very nice analog of all of these results. Now, we're not going to reach for a general subgroup. We're just going to reach for a general compact subgroup, but we don't insist that it's normal. So in some sense, our result is different than these. So it turns out we needed a sort of funny technical condition to make our proofs work. It seems like an interesting one all the same. So I'll let this TFG be the trigonometric polynomials arising from the finite dimensional unitary representations. And it's sort of well known that the closure of this is the almost periodic functions. So really, G is maximally almost periodic, i.e. the almost periodic functions separate points, if and only if this guy separates points. Now what's sort of interesting is if you have a generic compact subgroup, it's not necessarily true that these guys will separate points of that compact subgroup. Just consider, for example, SL2R, whose almost periodic compactification is a singleton. And there are compact subgroups in there. So this is sort of a genuine definition. But as long as we're generous enough with our compact subgroup, and I have that my algebra allows these things to act as multipliers, well, then I get certain nice relationships between ideals in my algebra and ideals in the sort of quotient-type algebra. So for example, If I consider the ideal in the algebra of the larger set on E star, well, that's actually the closed ideal generated by this ideal here when I apply to it the map that takes A of G mod K back into A of G. That's what I called N. Okay. It turns out with this, we get all these really nice conditions. Seems like almost any reasonable or interesting condition you can say about the ideal vanishing on a set in the larger algebra somehow has a mirror over here. So there's a good sampling of them. Now, probably I won't be able to specifically talk about these again, but these do show up in a lot of these proofs here. This is a very major technical tool. Okay, well, let me tell you about A delta. So this is really our sort of first discovery in this venture. So I start with the Fourier algebra of G, and I want to know what this space looks like as a set of functions on G, which of course I'm identifying with that quotient space. Well, it turns out you can actually identify in sort of a nice way what functions they are. Turns out a function is going to be in here. Well, that's exactly when this series with the Schatten 2 norm, the Hilbert-Schmidt norms, converges. Actually, I have to confess, that really surprised us. We really expected to see trace norms in here, not Hilbert-Schmidt. And actually, the reason it comes about is pretty much through this lemma. It turns out if you end up applying this map here and you have that you take a representation and its conjugate representation, you end up with a particular kind of rank 1, always. And then it turns out it's somehow the norm of one of the vectors on one of the sides that influences the whole norm procedure here. But you have to compute that out. It's not completely obvious, I would suggest. But once knowing it, it gets this kind of interesting result. And it tells us in particular that if G is not almost abelian, which by Cal Moore means that it has representations of unbounded, of arbitrarily large degrees, well, this norm formula is not equivalent to the norm formula for the Fourier algebra. So this is some sort of different space. So it answers in the negative one of those questions I posed, which actually surprised me a little bit. Well, it turns out we can even sort of keep iterating this construction, and we get a whole bunch of these algebras. Well, let me not go into detail too much, but suffice to say that if G is sufficiently, well, not simple enough, we actually get a proper nested family of all of these guys here. And the reason why I state these is they actually end up having some value in the analysis, and then this brings us to a negative answer to the second question. So I talked about a Fourier algebra on a coset space, and we wonder, naturally wonder about potential for amenability. Well, of all of the amenability conditions I've mentioned, operator weak amenability is the weakest. If something is weakly amenable, it's certainly operator weakly amenable. But actually, these things aren't even that. Well, at least in particular cases. If I have a non-abelian connected Lie group, compact, I should have said compact, connected Lie group, then this quotient algebra is not operator weakly amenable. And really, the main point is really the starting line here. It turns out that with such a group, you necessarily get a torus in there somewhere that when you say restrict it to irreducible representations, it's a direct sum of characters. And the characters correspond to integers that just aren't too big. Well, using that estimate, you end up with a point derivation. So this is a genuine derivative. And it's known that point derivations are related to weak amenability in that if they exist, you know, you're not weakly amenable. Well, you notice I've only done it for the so-called A2, whatever the heck that thing is. Maybe it's not clear why that would relate back to here. Well, it turns out our results on relating ideals is the key, getting back and forth. And then we appeal to a result of Niels Gronbeck, characterizing weak amenability of commutative Banach algebras. Well, commutative semi-simple Banach algebras, anyway. And in fact, with a little bit of work, we could even lift this to some general situations. But now it makes for an interesting open question, and one which I could not tell you the answer to, which is, could I characterize when A of G mod K is operator weakly amenable? I really have no idea. All right. And actually, another interesting application comes up here. This is pointed out to me by Ibrahim, is that we can get some very natural occurring sets. Well, maybe not so natural, but simple to write down, which are not of spectral synthesis. And I find this kind of neat because this set is just a product of two groups. Now, neither of those is normal. And experience tells you when you try to take products of non-normal groups, you don't expect anything that looks like a group. But it's a pretty simple construction of a non-spectral set. All right. Well, let me just move on to some more positive results. Okay, I better keep a move on here. Okay, now let me just tell you briefly about hypertauberian algebra. This is a theory of Ibrahim Sami's, actually done in his thesis at University of Manitoba. Now, this is a very interesting set of observations of his. So he made this nice definition of what it means for an operator from A to its own dual to be a local operator. And then we say that an algebra is hypertauberian, or respectively operator hypertauberian, if for every bounded, or respectively completely bounded, linear local map, so local having this condition up here, well, that's actually a module map over this algebra A. And it turns out hypertauberian is nice because it's actually sometimes much easier to verify than some other conditions, and it implies conditions that we're interested in. For example, it implies weak amenability in all suitable conditions, and also it even relates to some spectral synthesis conditions. And I should be honest, maybe Ibrahim, are there known examples of weakly amenable non-hypertauberian? There are, so this is actually not quite as general as weak amenability. So this is really a genuine definition. It's not just a recoloring of weak amenability for this class of algebras. And actually, it turns out, corresponding to the very nice fact that A of G, for the connected component of the identity being abelian, is weakly amenable, well, it turns out that these guys are always weakly amenable too, but actually, with just a slight bit of extra effort, we could go the extra mile, so they're even hypertauberian. So they satisfy all of these nice properties of Ibrahim's. All right. Okay, let me just briefly mention, there are some situations where we get the stronger property of operator amenability, but it seems like it's a pretty restricted sort of situation. Turns out A of G mod K, this is for an amenable group which for which the almost periodic function separate points of K. Well, it turns out you can prove that this guy here is operator amenable if and only if this is a member of the closed coset ring of G cross G. Now, if you think about this condition, this is a product of two subgroups. It's actually not really going to be that often when this occurs. In fact, we already saw a case where this can fail spectral synthesis, and all these guys are spectral. That's what Brian mentioned in his talk. And in fact, the only types of things we could divine that are even in here is if K has within it a subgroup which is normal in the whole group G. That might be a characterization of this, but I'm not completely certain. I haven't actually played around with it carefully enough to know. Okay. Well, I think I have time for just one last comment then. Well, when it came to the projective tensor product of Banach spaces, the range of the convolution map, or the twisted convolution with twisting the variable on one side, were the same because exchanging the variable for its inverse is an isometry of Fourier algebras. But it's not completely bounded. In fact, for exactly the same reason that transpose operation is not completely bounded on all of B of H, where H is a Hilbert space. So actually, when one considers that, one figures out that it's actually worth trying to test convolutions on the Fourier algebra. And we can sort of put this in a similar kind of general context as we had earlier. And actually, this one surprised me a little bit. It turns out that when you apply the convolution to basically A of G operator projective tensor A of G, that should be to that guy there, you get exactly the same effect, whereas if you use the Banach-based projective tensor product, it turns out the range is identical. And you get things that look like this. And I call it A gamma. Why? Because it turns out this is a formula that Barry Johnson recognized for this funny algebra, which he was very carefully able to use that proved that for groups like SO3, the Fourier algebra fails to be weakly amenable. So it turns out even the convolutions in general will not be surjective, because if these d pi's are growing without bound, it's pretty easy to convince yourself that this norm is not equivalent to the norm I announced for the Fourier algebra earlier. I think this is a good place in which to stop. Sorry, thank you for your attention. Too much sugar.
Thank you.